Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffee House and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffee House here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. Be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in West King.
It would be a little weird.
Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's just a click away. StrangeBrewCoffeeHouse.com.
It's actually pronounced West T. King.
Well, it's two words.
They misspelled them on there.
West King.
Yep. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
It's actually West King. West King.
West King.
West King. West King. There is no space.
Yep.
There you go.
Lee Battelle, he's the one who told
me
about
over
West
it.
King.
Or the official geographer. Cartographer of the program. We'd already finished that one. Pip Printing and Signs.
Just do it over again.
We'll call it the new city and everything. Pip Printing and Signs. By the way, no, I do have to stay with. Within a 5 minute, 10 minute radius here, you got four towns or cities that all start with a W: West King, Whistler, Woodwards, and Waynesboro.
West King is around Waynesboro?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just north of Waynesboro.
I've been through Waynesboro a whole bunch.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Pip Printing and Signs.
Wayne Academy Jaguars.
Oh, I thought you were going to go Wayne County.
I've never been up there to watch them play.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen them in the state championship.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just, whenever I was in Waynesboro, it was to see Wayne Academy.
Yeah. Okay. Pip Printing and Signs. I just saw the tweet you're talking about with Mike Tomlin. His picture is hilarious. I'll get to Pip Printing and Signs eventually. Maybe they can put a big picture of this smile. This is going to be a meme. You realize
yep.
That is the Tomlin face. So
it's kind of like that GIF of him like hitting his chest and then pointing at the camera.
Yeah. That's what we got here.
I just can't give up on this guy.
Yeah.
I've tried. I will again in the middle of the season this year, and then I'll love him again.
He's a good coach. Don't go too far. Pip Printing and Signs.
There we go.
Reliable service for every business need. Guys, I want you to go to the website, pipridgeland.com, and get an idea of the incredible number of things that a deal with Pip Printing and Signs can do for your business. You know, it's not just about, hey, can they come up with some fancy-looking mailers for us? Now, they can completely transform the way people see your business from day one. So we're not just talking about, oh, I'm going to get something in the mail, and it's from Pip Printing and Signs. I'm talking about when I walk in the door of your business, my opinion is going to be different because of the incredible work they're able to do with signage, with graphics, with brochures, with everything that your business needs to get its message out there. You need to give Cam Baker a call. Tell him you heard about him on Thunder and Lightning. 601-499-5216. Talk to Cam. That's his number directly. You're going to be going directly to the top. You're not going to be dealing with, this is not a switchboard number or a 1-800 number or anything like that. When you need printing, call Pip today. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com is the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you are looking for, and you are looking for it. Guys, I go back to what we talked about the other day. As long as it's not the Banner M, we're cool. We're cool. So if you really are a fan of the state script and you want to wear those polos, I'm telling you right now there's an incredible selection of them at College Corner. But if you want the interlocking, great selection of gear there as well. If you want the M over S, plenty of that as well. So whatever your favorite Mississippi State logo is, they've got it at College Corner. Two locations to serve you in the Jackson area, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowood by the Half Shell, or you can shop online, collegecornerstore.com. Bobby and I just left Restaurant Tyler, and man, was it good. I mean, it was good. From old Brian, black and catfish, cheese grits, and mac and cheese. I got a little extra piece of catfish on there. They'll do that for you, by the way. You just have to ask. It ain't free, but it's good. And then, Robbie, would you get fried chicken?
Fried chicken,
mashed potatoes,
black-eyed peas.
I mean, it don't get any more Southern than the meal that Robbie and I just ate. So if you want the best lunch in town, the only place to get it is at Restaurant Tyler. They have the best blue plate in town. And if you're a blue plate person like I am, you just can't turn it down. And the cool thing is, like, I had blackened catfish today. I could go back tomorrow, have something completely different, and it would just still be as delicious. So something to keep in mind. You don't have to eat the same thing every time. You can have a great lunch every single time you walk in the door at Restaurant Tyler. Priority One Bank, 16 locations to serve you throughout Central Mississippi. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide and let them show you what they can do for your money. You did the hard work to get the money to the bank. Let them take it from there. Let them show you how to invest, how to manage your money, and how to build your finances and your future for a long, long time. If you live in Central Mississippi, there is a location near you. So give them a call, give them a look, talk to them today. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. Normally we do the opponent preview second part of the show. We're going to do it in the first part of the show today because I have a topic I want to work around it, Robbie, and it's something I've been talking about a lot on Sports Talk Mississippi, and I'm not getting a lot of pushback from Richard and Borky on it. I think they agree with me, so I want to get your thoughts. If somebody asks me what is the most important game of the season for Mississippi State, my answer is the Florida game. I think State has a fantastic chance to be 3-0 when they play the Gators. Should be a lot of excitement, should be a good crowd. This is a Florida team that I don't have a whole lot of hopes for, that could possibly be a 1-2 limping Florida team into Starkville. If you win that game and you're 4-0, winning a bowl game, I'm not saying it's a lock, but it's awfully close at that point. At that point, you should be considering where you want to go in December if you want to go to the bowl game. If you lose this game, it is going to be incredibly, incredibly difficult for Mississippi State to make a bowl. Because now we're going to have to talk about a big upset. You know, we were looking at the schedule yesterday on Sports Talk, and we're talking about how six of State's games are against top 20 teams. You know, Georgia, Texas, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Missouri, Tennessee, right? Those are all top 20 teams.
Somebody had their schedule as second toughest in the country,
yeah. The other six games.
Florida is number one.
Yeah, the other six games are against unranked teams. So winning those games is the easiest path. Now you're telling me if State doesn't beat Florida, they've got to win a game where, gosh, Robbie, as we sit here today, State would probably be a 3-touchdown underdog to any one of those teams. Even Texas A&M, probably the lowest rated one. So beating Florida to me is the absolute swing game of the season. Have to have win. Do you agree?
Yeah. Okay. At least at this point. Now, when you get through that game, then there's another game.
But
if you're just looking at the schedule before the season even begins, I think there's no question that's probably most important. It reminds me in some ways, my expectations for this team isn't the same that it was for that one, but
right.
It reminds me in some ways of that 18 Florida game that was in Starkville. State had built some momentum, huge game, huge atmosphere. You can't chance to start the season off with a bang, beat Dan Mullen, all that stuff. It's similar in some ways, and not in the fact that you got your former coach coming in here and you got a chance to be inside the top 15 or whatever they were at the time. But I do think that this is an opportunity for Mississippi State to build some momentum because the stretch of games coming up after that are going to be difficult, to say the least. You got Texas, Georgia, Texas A&M, three straight weeks. There's a very good chance that you go 0-3 in that stretch. You would love to be 4-0 and only needing – because at this point, I mean, let's just be honest. I know the team's mindset is going to be different than ours, but we're going to talk differently than they will.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get to a bowl game this year. You're not competing for the SEC championship this year.
Correct.
You're trying to build momentum into next season. You're trying to prove that you're going in the right direction. And to do that, I think it's having a better season than you did last year, which was a 5-win team. So you need to get back into a bowl game. You need to show the progress under a first-year head coach. To do that, every win is monumental for this team. And you got three non-conference games where you can build a 3-0 record, and then you could potentially be 4-0 here after playing Florida. That would be huge for this team. Even if you do lose the next three games, you're looking for two more wins. And you could potentially get that with Arkansas and UMass, then everything else is gravy. But this game And I think the Arkansas game is very similar too. I think they need both of those games. But this one, no question, is your biggest game to that point in the season.
Yeah.
And you got a chance to make a little bit of a statement. I mean, Florida is still Florida from a brand standpoint. Mm-hmm. They still got people watching them. And it would still be a big win for Mississippi State to be able to get this in year one.
It doesn't matter what Florida is. If Florida's 3-0 or Florida's 1-2, it's still a huge game for Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm.
The difference in what everybody is saying about Mississippi State at 4-0 versus 3-1 is massive. There's a chance. We talked about this yesterday. If State wins this game and they're 4-0 and they're going to Texas, there's a slight chance. I don't think they will be, but there's a slight chance they're like 25th.
Yeah,
you're ranked. And look, does that ranking hold the whole year? No. But getting ranked in the first year of a head coach that you have come out and said, you know, hey, it's a bit of a rebuild there, that would be massive just from a perception standpoint. You get people talking about you. You get people saying, well, Jeff Lebby really got this program going in a great direction early on, and you know, it looks like they're in the right way. If you lose that game, nobody cares. You're just the team that's playing Texas in their first SEC game.
And then you go into those two games, and then we start talking about the best-case scenario, which we predicted best case for Mississippi State is still probably losing to mm-hmm. these two teams on the road, just because it's just hard to imagine winning those ball games. But you put up a fight in those games, and people are taking you seriously. Started 4-0, and then they went to Texas and Georgia, and they didn't give up, and they scored, you know, four touchdowns in a couple of those games or whatever. And then you come into Texas A&M, and you still have that momentum. Even if you lost the games,
mm-hmm.
you put up a fight, you're in the ball game for three quarters or something, and you got a Texas A&M team that you've traditionally played well against,
yeah.
last year notwithstanding. And then the momentum kind of picks up again. If you're able to win that game against A&M, you got two winnable games after that. Now you're talking about potentially getting to 7 wins, and the whole narrative on this team suddenly changes, and this program as well. And I've already seen, I mean, I saw another one today from one of our guys at On Three, Philip Dukes, was talking about how he believes Jeff Lebby is going to be a problem eventually at Mississippi State, mm-hmm. and how, you know, his offense has been very difficult to deal with everywhere he's been. He's a guy that identifies your weaknesses, strikes. Then people really start to jump on board, I think, with Lebby. I think he's a guy that could very easily become like a media darling.
Yeah, I agree
if
with
he's
that.
Able to show
he's
some.
Young, he's funny.
Yeah,
yeah, I definitely
and his offense. Everybody loves offense.
And everybody loves offense. That's a good point. You made a good point there. The going back to what we were saying, the hype around a 4-2 Mississippi State team that started out 4-0, then they lose to number 3 Texas,
yeah.
and then number 1 Georgia. But both of those games were competitive, and you know they weren't complete total blowouts.
Just don't lose
playing
like
a Texas A&M team. There are going to be people saying, "Hey, I think the Dogs can get this one."
Yeah.
Whereas a 3-3 team, you're not getting that same hype. So
that might be the time of year where this team's really coming together, because I do think there's going to be some moments early on this season where State looks a little disjointed,
right.
or something, because you have so many new faces, transfers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you have a new coach, a lot of times it takes some time for that to build.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could happen with Mississippi State, but again, best case scenario is you still win your first 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably going to lose to Texas and Georgia anyway, so if you're taking lumps there, whatever. Hopefully by the time you get to A&M, you're 4-2, you're 6 games into the Jeff Lebby era, everybody's kind of getting on the same page, and you're able to turn it up here at the end, because there are some winnable matchups in there. And even the games that are going to be with teams that are, you know, potential playoff teams, Missouri and Ole Miss, maybe even Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
those are games that I could see State hanging in and having a chance.
Yeah.
You know?
So let's go to the interview now. Graham Hall, I talked to him earlier today. He covers the Florida Gators for Swamp 20. It was. I was correct. It was Swamp 24/7.
Yes.
For the Florida Gators. We've had him on the podcast a few times before. Let's go to that interview now and get a better look at this Florida Gator team. So let's get the preview on the Florida Gators from Graham Hall. Covers the Gators for Swamp 24/7 down there in Gainesville. And Graham, I just, you know, last week we previewed Texas. We do our opponent previews back to front so that when we finish, we're at the start of the season. So we did Texas last week, and I was all happy, you know, lovey-dovey with those guys, telling them, oh, I think you had a chance to be undefeated, be SEC champs. It's not going to be the same today. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you with Florida. I am a lot lower on Florida than I feel like a lot of people around me are. So give me a 30-second elevator pitch on why this Florida Gator team is not only going to be above my expectations, but could even end up having what would be considered a good season.
Well, I think that they've shored up a lot of issues on their team, starting with the defense, adding some talent there in the secondary, particularly the safety spot, adding Asa Turner, DJ Douglas, TriQuez Bridges, getting Jordan Castell back for his sophomore year after an impressive freshman season. Devin Moore, fully healthy as well, should help at cornerback. That's going to be huge for Florida, which struggled to stop these explosive offenses in the SEC last year. And then getting Graham Mertz back for his second year, you know, first time Billy Napier has had a returning starting quarterback at Florida. I know we're just only going into year three here, but getting him back should lead to some continuity with the offense. And he was impressive last year. You know, he was just shy before that injury of setting a top 10 single season passing record in Florida program history, really cut down on his turnovers last year. What, just three interceptions, and all of them were, I think, deflected off of his receiver's hands. So you look at that, and then you factor in the more competitive depth in multiple spots, linebacker, defensive line improving, getting some talented wide receivers, Elijah Badger as well. This should be a team that takes a step forward. And if they do have injuries, which is the case with every single team, as you know, you mentioned Texas now dealing with C.J. Baxter being out for the season, Florida losing Montrell Johnson for you know, a little bit of time here with a week-to-week injury with that knee injury. You know, having a more competitive depth should allow Florida to avoid a huge drop-off if that injury bug, when that injury bug does strike. So across the board, more talent, some continuity, some coaching changes they think are going to help. It's just that schedule that you look at and wonder, how are they going to navigate this absolute beast of a slate?
Florida last year, I thought Graham Mertz was one of the most surprising players, maybe in college football. You know, you saw what he had done at Wisconsin, and I just didn't have him being one of the top quarterbacks in the country on my bingo card last year. But he was. He was really, really good for the Gators. Then the Gators go out and sign the nation's number one high school quarterback in DJ Lagway. I do a radio show with Richard Cross, who does games for ESPN. He did the Florida spring game, and when he came back from that, he was like, man, that kid, he can play. And in this day and age of college football, you know, five stars don't show up and expect to – the days of just redshirting and developing are kind of over. What's the plan at Florida to balance those two guys who I think can both be successful?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question, and one that kind of, I think, remains to be seen here. DJ Lagway needs to continue progressing. I think the raw physical talent is evident. You know, he's fine-tuned his mechanics. His footwork has improved. His understanding of the offense has progressed. You know, getting here in spring camp is obviously going to help him. But you have a guy back in Graham Mertz who is the de facto leader of this team, no doubt about it whatsoever. You know, a six-year guy who, as you mentioned, was impressive, was the most accurate quarterback returning to the SEC, completed nearly 73% of his passes last year. How do they balance that? I think that if you have both quarterbacks, it makes you a lot more difficult to prepare for, right? Because they have two very different skill sets. DJ Lagway, a guy who is not afraid to use his legs, has a very powerful arm, maybe can throw even farther downfield than Graham Mertz can. But then you have a guy in Mertz who just knows the system. You can trust him. I think if you're a little bit at a higher rate, if you're Billy Napier, how do they balance that? I would not be surprised, and I'm not saying that DJ Lagway is Tim Tebow, so before anyone runs with that, I got to pump the brakes there right now. Don't put those type of expectations on anyone right now, because, you know, you'll crumble under the pressure if you're being called, you know, Tim Tebow in a sense here. But I do think, just similar to the way that Florida in 2006 used Tim Tebow and Chris Leak, where Tim Tebow came in some goal line situations, gave you a different look, allowed you to run some of that wildcat, that, you know, the spread offense that Urban Meyer really just was so successful with in Gainesville. That is what I think is going to be DJ Lagway's role. Make it more difficult for the defense to have to prepare for two quarterbacks and keep them guessing at times, knowing that you could trade one in and one out. The big question for me, and I really am surprised that I don't see this too much being discussed right now, is how are you going to handle the quarterback switching with the in-game helmet communication aspect that we're going to see in college football this year, they would have to coordinate having, you know, guys ready to go in who have that earpiece in, and you can't have, I think, more than two guys on the field at the same time with it, or it's going to be a penalty, something else the teams are going to have to navigate this year. Maybe that's an element that makes you, as a head coach, when you're a team like Florida that has a very small margin of error based on the schedule and based on what happened to you last year, maybe that makes you hesitate a little bit. But I'm with you. I think that his talent is simply too much for Florida to sideline him, especially in this day and age with NIL and worrying about the transfer portal and guys have an opportunity to go elsewhere if they don't like their role. All of these factors makes it really hard for me to see DJ Lagway not playing a role this season. I just don't know if it's going to be very significant. I think he'll be able to help Florida's offense, but I think it'll be in a very complimentary fashion, giving them some different looks and forcing the defense on a week-to-week basis to have to prepare for the possibility of two quarterbacks, even if Graham Mertz goes out there and takes 90 to 95% of the snaps.
You mentioned the injury to Montrell Johnson. Of course, Trevor Etienne now at Georgia. The Florida backfield, just not a lot of experience there. Is there talent? Who's going to have to carry the ball for them? And what do we really know about Johnson and how long he'll be out?
I think that for Montrell Johnson, a lot of it remains to be seen. You know, Billy Napier said today that they're going to go at his timeline. They're not going to rush this guy back as durable as he has been. You don't obviously want to re-aggravate it, but, you know, Billy Napier called it a very minor injury, one that they're going to be cautious with. He's out there in pads at practice. He's on both feet. This isn't something that is going to cause him to miss a significant duration of the season, but could I see him potentially missing that first game of the year against Miami? Absolutely. I mean, and maybe even they choose to rest him for another week, knowing that they have Samford in week two before starting SEC play. That would make a lot of sense to me, not rushing the guy back, knowing that he did have to get that knee scoped out a little bit. But you mentioned the talent behind him, a lot of potential, but not much experience. The most experienced guy is Trayon Webb, a sophomore who had, what, 150 yards on the ground last year, two touchdowns. He was the third back on the roster behind Etienne, who's at Georgia, like you mentioned, and Johnson, who's been Florida's leading rusher the past 2 years. Trayon Webb is going to have to carry the load here for Florida. And if you look at Billy Napier's offenses historically during his coaching career, I mean, this is the guy who is intent on running the football, no matter who he has back there. You know, he runs the ball about 60% of the time. So I do think that they're going to have to rely on Webb against the Hurricanes, whether Johnson's back or not, at a high rate this early on in the season, especially. And then you look behind him. I mean, Jaden Baugh was fantastic in the spring game as well, a very promising freshman, just like DJ Lagway. KD Daniels was good as well. That's two freshmen, though, that are going to have to, I think, play early on this season, because you're not going to see just one back get the lion's share of the carries. They're going to take a by-committee approach. They're not going to change their approach too much, even though Johnson, his availability for the next coming weeks remains to be seen.
And we know a thing or two about KD Daniels up here in this neck of the woods. That's a really, really good football player that's in Gainesville right now. Mississippi State was not happy to miss out on him as part of their signing class a season ago. With this this Gator schedule, I mean, it's almost to the point where it's a meme, right? We just keep talking about it, and we talk so much about the back end of the schedule, as we should, right? After the second bye, Georgia at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss at Florida State. Very, very tough, obviously. The beginning of the season, Miami, then you mentioned the Samford game, Texas A&M at home, and then you got to go to Mississippi State. I think a fast start is possible for the Gators, but also a really bad start is possible for the Gators. How do you see the Gators in the first month of the season? Do you think they get off to a fast start, or do they stumble coming out of the gate?
That's the huge question for me, because that intangible of momentum, you know, especially the first week, what it's going to do for setting narratives when it comes to Billy Napier and Mario Cristobal, and kind of validating all this positivity that you've heard from the program in Gainesville in the last 7 months, that's going to be huge for them, a huge 60 minutes of football in that game. Then Texas A&M, a team with a new head coach, what does their offense look like? They get Connor Wegman back, but that defense is going to be one of the best in the SEC in my mind. You know, getting Shamar Turner back as well, you know, that is going to be a very, very talented group. You can't say that's a guaranteed win in any way, even though, you know, you're going to get that home field advantage. And then Kentucky as well, you know, Mark Stoops, the most tenured coach in the SEC now, been in Lexington for 12 years.
Crazy to think that, but
it is, right. You know, but that with Nick Saban hanging it up and putting on the ESPN jersey now, I think that you really, you know, look at what Stoops has done. I've always been a fan of the way he's recruited, the way his staff is evaluated, and he may have two of the best defensive players in the SEC, if not the entire country, in defensive lineman Deion Walker and Maxwell Harrison there at cornerback. I mean, he may be the SEC's best corner, if not their best secondary player. I know guys like Malachi Starks may have an argument there as well, but, you know, what is their offense going to look like? They have former five-star quarterback Brock Vandegrift, who transferred from Georgia. You have Chip Traynham, who came on over from Ohio State. They've obviously added some talent there at wideout as well. I mean, that's a team that beat Florida last year. You can't sleep on them. The big one, though, and this is another one for bragging rights, where I'm very intrigued how this game is going to go, especially for Billy Napier's tenure here in Gainesville, is that October 5th matchup against UCF. I mean, look at UCF's schedule. Not saying they're playing a whole bunch of cupcakes, because Big 12 play is interesting. They got to go to Iowa State, play BYU, play Arizona and Arizona State back-to-back weeks. But that first couple games of the year for the Knights is extremely winnable. They could come into Gainesville undefeated with KJ Jefferson at quarterback, a guy who beat Florida last year on senior night, right? Albeit against a defense that was very beat up. But they also have one of the nation's best running backs in RJ Harvey. They added Penny Boone from Toledo as well. I mean, this is a really good team. The defense is absolutely the question in my mind when it comes to UCF, as well as how well they're going to be able to protect Jefferson and carve out holes for the run game there along the offensive line. But that is going to be a game that I could see being extremely close here in Gainesville. So, you know, that's the early slate for Florida to pick up some wins. If they can't manage to do that before they get into November, there's going to be a lot of people out there who are writing Billy Napier's obituary at Florida and starting to say this guy's tenure is coming to an end. They better get some wins early on before they face that daunting five-game stretch against, like you mentioned, Georgia, LSU, FSU, Texas. I mean, you know, Ole Miss is going to be here on senior night. That is going to be absolutely grueling. If they can win one of those games, I think a lot of people would be impressed. So they absolutely better win some in the first seven, or else it's hard for me to see, you know, them stick by Billy Napier. As much as I think that he is an impressive person and has built the Florida program back to be competitive and that this team is better, that schedule is unforgiving. It is relentless. You better pick up your wins when you have a chance to. You better not shoot yourselves in the foot, which we did see some last year from the Gators. They better avoid those issues, and they better find wins when they can get them, because they may be hard to come by as the year goes on.
I love KJ Jefferson and the Gus Malzahn offense. I think it's just an absolute perfect fit. I agree with you. Central Florida is a team that's very interesting in this one. One last one. We'll make it a lighthearted question. Yesterday, the announcement from Florida International, Pitbull Stadium is coming there. If Florida were to have a celebrity field named, who is the Gators celebrity?
I guess it'd be Tom Petty, right? I mean, you're already playing the song there in the third quarter. I know some people would maybe like it to be a former Gator in a sense here. You know, Tim Tebow Stadium, Steve Spurrier Stadium would be fantastic as well. But
they don't have the money, though. We got to get some money into the program.
We got to get some money. You know, Tom Petty's family owns a ton of that music rights. You've seen a lot of artists recently sell off their music rights. Imagine they sell the rights to Tom Petty's catalog and use that to reach out and establish his legacy in other means and have Tom Petty Stadium named after him. That'd be pretty cool. Pitbull opened the door. What a, you know, changed the game in a sense here, man. Took the Big 12's money and took it and put it in Florida International.
There you go.
Kind of has opened the game for music artists to be taking over. And when it comes to naming rights, I think it's absolutely fascinating. That would make the most sense to me. You know, if not, it's going to be something boring, like whoever the founder of NVIDIA is, you know, the UF grad, someone with a ton of money. So it definitely appeals to, you know, demographics, especially younger demographics, to have a notable name so you could go there. Man, if only Taylor Swift went to University of Florida, that'd be the obvious one for me. I mean, I don't know if less than Jake Stadium or Against Me Stadium. I don't know if anyone knows who those acts are. Some Gainesville acts, you know, fueled by Ramen Stadium, whatever you want to call it. I don't know if that has the same ring to it, but If I had to guess one right now, I'd go with Tom Petty Stadium. But I also think Gatorade Stadium would be pretty awesome, man. I got to be honest. I mean, Gatorade Stadium, Gatorade may be more well-known on an international level than the Florida Gators, University of Florida. That would appeal to potentially an even larger demographic than the Gators, be internationally recognizable. That would be very sick in my mind. I just don't know if we're going to see it. Before we're going to see that, before we see the University of Florida Stadium renamed, we are going to see in the next couple of years, potentially even this season, you're going to start seeing, you know, fields with the field logos. That is coming up here pretty soon. You know, Arkansas definitely going to get Tyson and Walmart on their field here coming up. You know, Ohio State been ahead of the curve with Safe Light field logos on there. Mm-hmm. Teams are selling these from what I've heard. They're asking for, you know, a 5-6 year commitment, multi-year commitment, and they're asking for 7 figures in some cases to put these field logos down there. And then after that, we're going to get jersey patches. So that's probably more in the pipeline here coming up in Florida going Gatorade Stadium.
I didn't think we were going to get a less than Jake reference on the show today, but you proved me wrong. So there we go.
Great fall. We'd have all the great falling apart headlines, you know.
Yeah.
The anthem for Florida, you know. Gosh. But it's Gainesville Rock City. It'd be great as well. Big Less Than Jake fan. Give me some ska back in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. Rename it. I'm all for it.
There you go. Graham Hall, Swamp 24/7, man. Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Always my pleasure. Y'all take care of it.
All right. Thanks to Graham. Appreciate his time. Interesting stuff. And obviously, he and I seem to have two different opinions of what this Gator team is going to be. But we'll find out. I guess we'll find out who's correct.
He thinks they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, he thinks they're going to be all right. I mean, I don't know about pretty good, but I have them as one of the worst teams in the conference. I have them going 3-9. He ain't agreeing with that.
All their media thinks this is going to be a turnaround season, and he's going to prove the doubters wrong and stuff.
The thing is,
what have we seen from him?
A turnaround season on this schedule would be going 6-6.
Yeah.
Like, if he goes 7-5.
That was the problem last year. Yeah. I remember we were breaking that schedule down last year, and I was like, you know, they could be better.
Yeah.
But what's that mean? Like,
exactly.
In terms of wins and losses,
right,
it's hard to find.
Right, right.
So I think that's kind of the issue they're going to have again this year. And eventually they're going to have to say, look, I mean, we're paying this guy millions of dollars. They look like they're kind of getting better, but, you know, we should be seeing results at Florida.
Year three,
greater than what we're seeing.
We talked yesterday about year three and what we think Lebby should look like in year three. And yet, here's Florida in year three of Napier, and they're not going to look anything like that. They're going to be struggling to get the 7 wins.
And it might be okay at Mississippi State.
Yeah, it's not
at
Florida.
If you're steadily moving.
It's not at Florida.
At Florida, you should be in contention with Georgia and Alabama and Texas.
I agree.
They're not.
Yeah. All right, let's move into the rest of the show that's brought to you by our friends over at the Mississippi Beef Council, who want to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. Whether you're cooking it yourself or whether you want to go out to one of the great steakhouses we have in the state of Mississippi, enjoy beef this weekend. I couldn't pull the trigger, but I saw a whole brisket at Kroger the other day. I was like, how much is that bad boy? You want to guess how much a 20-pounder was?
It's over $100.
Oh, it was $160. Eight bucks a pound.
Ooh.
I mean, and that's one of those things where you're
good quality meat.
It's good quality meat, and you're going to feed a ton of people.
Oh, yeah. That,
but at the same time, you're just like, wow, it's a lot.
A lot of money.
But hey, Mississippi beef, some of the best in the world. And of course, I would definitely encourage you to enjoy it wherever you do this weekend. If you're cooking or if they're cooking, make it beef. Beef, it's what's for dinner. Thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District is the place to find the smoked southern soul food that you are looking for. And you are looking for it. Guys, if you want to have a great meal, you need to go to Two Brothers Smoked Meats. I tell people all the time, and Robbie and I both, when you're in the media, you get people asking you, hey, you know, I'm going to be in Starkville to cover a game. I'm coming to talk to so-and-so. You know, where do I want to go eat? Both of us, every time, we're saying Two Brothers. And we're telling you to do the same. And a lot of you guys have listened to our advice, and you've come back and said, hey, you were right. Well, there you go. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District, or head over to the Older Brother for a fancy sandwich and the best French fries in the state of Mississippi. I'll go that far.
Calling his shot.
I'm calling my shot on that one. If you want a great meal, it's right there to you in the heart of the Cotton District at Two Brothers Smoked Meats and the Older Brother. Great products, great service. Every business likes to promise it to you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems, and they've been doing it for 49 years. 49 years of taking care of their customers from start to finish, from the sale to long, long after the sale. And they build that relationship with you so that when something, you know, we always talk about service after the sale and, you know, trying to fix what's broken. Eventually, you know, it's a machine, right? It's gonna tucker out on you at some point. But that's the repeat business that Advantage Business Systems brings, because you know, hey, I can go buy a product that's going to last a long time, and then when I do have problems with it, they'll fix them. That's how you get people to come back to you, and they've been doing it for 49 years, so you know that people have, in fact, been coming back. Give them a call today, 601-362-9192, or you can visit them online, absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. Before you are at the games this fall, make sure that you are at Maroon & Co. You need new gear. Get it at Maroon & Co. When you're in Starkville, that's the place to go, is Maroon & Company. Everything you are looking for there, new logos, new gear, stuff you can't find anywhere else, it's all right there at Maroon & Co. So if you haven't been already, you need to check it out. Before you go to Davis Wade Stadium this fall, go to Maroon & Co. and use our promo code THUNDER15 for 15% off regular price. Some exclusions do apply. All right, earlier today we got a chance to talk to Jeff Lebby. Middle of the week practice, Mississippi State 3 days away from the first scrimmage of preseason camp. Let's hear what the head Bulldog had to say following today's camp.
I asked you a couple days ago, what do you want to see the second day of practice? And you talked about what we'll work on in meetings. We're correcting that. Is that what you're seeing thus far?
It's been some of that, and not as good as we want it to be. You know, I think that's the reality of it. We talked about it this morning in the team meeting. You know, guys fixing problems, you know, in the meeting room and being able to take them to the field. So we've gotten a lot better at that, but still wanting to be a lot better.
Gabe Moore yesterday put on his Facebook video that he's sitting out this year for health issues. Do you have any other information regarding that?
No comment on it. We'll keep it internal and in-house, but hoping the best, wishing the best for Gabe.
How has the defense kind of looked and progressed throughout camp?
Yeah, I mean, the last 2 days defensively really dominated the practices. Today was a little more even match, but defensively a lot of really good things, creating turnovers, having unbelievable energy and toughness and physicality. Today, again, was a little more back and forth, but that's what we want to see. You know, you want to see things not go well and then somebody respond, and you also want to see true back and forth. But Coleman and the defensive staff have done a great job with those guys, getting them ready to practice every day.
What's your process for installing your offense? I mean, you did it in the spring, but as far as training camp is concerned, how quickly do you want that to be, processed by your guys and taken in?
Yeah, we're being incredibly aggressive with the install. You know, we want to apply as much pressure as we can mentally and physically so we can see what guys we can go count on. You know, and our guys, again, they've taken to it. They've done a good job with it, but we've been really, really aggressive with the way we're installing through the first 10 days of camp.
Having most of that offense here in the spring, able to go through it, how big was that as far as transitioning to, you know, preparing for game one in a few weeks?
No, it was huge. Our guys got really good knowledge about what the expectation is, how we want to go play, how we want to do what we do. There's still a ton of growth to be made at every single position. But again, man, they've got great intent. They've had great energy in the building. We've been so far from perfect. It ain't funny, but at the same time, our guys are wanting to get better. And if we'll continue that, we'll be where we need to be.
You got 11 new starters on offense a season ago. How does the chemistry and the cohesiveness of this team compare to some of the veteran teams you've worked with in the past that have played together for years?
Yeah, I think it's different just because we haven't had that first one together. You know, and until you truly do that, I think there's some unknown. I think with the way we've trained, with the way we've worked, with the things that we've put them through, and how we've tried to connect as a locker room and as a program, I think it gives us a pretty good idea of the guys that are all the way in. And so those are the guys that we'll go count on, the ones that we can trust to go get it done.
How have the Russell brothers looked in practice so far?
Yeah, they've been good. It's been, again, they've got a ton of work to do. Monte's done a really good job. Monte's brought it every single day. He's had great energy, played with really good toughness. So really proud of where he's at and how he's turning into a really good leader for us.
You got your first.
We talked with Kelly Jones yesterday. He's certainly not lacking in confidence. What have you seen from him in camp, and if you think he can really be that next shutdown corner?
Well, just today he got beat on a couple things. There were bang-bang plays, but what I loved about it is he just ended the day with a 60-yard pick six. He's just playing the next play, and a guy that's getting out of his own way. He's preparing the right way. He's taking care of his body. This guy's incredibly talented, but he's a dude that is thankful for opportunity, and you see it on his face. You hear it in his conversation, and he'll be a guy that maximizes his potential.
You've got your first scrimmage this weekend of the camp. What's something that needs to happen between now and then for you to feel good going into the scrimmage?
Yeah, I think offensively, when we look at it, we want to play clean football. So we're going to play with a ton of tempo. We're going to play really, really aggressive. But from a penalty standpoint, pre-snap penalties, making sure that we're playing really clean football and not shooting ourselves in the foot is critical while taking care of the ball. And then defensively, it's all about getting the ball and then getting off the field on third down. And those are the things that we'll continue to look at. And that's what we want to make sure we continue to clean up before we get live on Sunday.
Jordan Mosley has been a guy that's been around a couple of years. How does he kind of fit in with your offense? What do you think of him so far?
Yeah, he's done a really good job. That's one that we're going to be able to count on. He's worked at a really high level. He's brought guys with him. Jordan, I'm excited about what he's going to do for us this fall.
Was there any kind of, coming into here with a bunch of turnover on defense and whatnot, was there any level of concern that you had about the defensive side of the ball? And you mentioned dominating the last couple of days of practice. Has that kind of, concern you had, has that eased down the last couple of days?
No, I mean, again, inside the building, I think other people might feel a different way than I feel. I know who we have in our building. I know the coaches that are coaching them every single day. We'll be prepared to go play the way we need to play, and I feel good about where we're at. We got to get a heck of a lot better in all three phases, but at the same time, we got people over there on the defensive side that are going to be able to get it done.
Blake has obviously emerged as your QB1. What have the other couple of guys looked like, Chris and Mike, battling behind them?
Yeah, competing every single day to be the two, finding a way to create some separation. And it is right now, it's neck and neck. You got to take great care of the ball, got to create predictable outcomes. That's all I talk about with them. I want to be able to call the play and know what's going to happen before it snapped. And so that's where we're trying to get. Chris has done a good job. He's got great athleticism, got great toughness, great energy. And Mike doesn't know what he doesn't know, but is really, really talented, throwing the football, very accurate. So these two guys got a ton of work to do, just like Blake does. But I like how they're going about their business.
You mentioned pre-snap penalties a minute ago, something you wanted to clean up. Is the team doing okay with the tempo that you want to play at?
Yeah, they're figuring that out. Obviously, the spring was a huge part of it, just understanding that. And so we've picked up kind of where we left off, and we've been able to build on that. So they understand what we're trying to accomplish, how we're trying to create advantage and create an edge through that, and doing a good job for the most part.
Kelly Akari named to the watch list for the Blitnikoff Award. What have you seen from him and how he's fitting into this offense and feel like he's in that spot?
Yeah, Kelly, again, is a guy that's played a ton of ball. Our expectation is that he's going to play a ton of ball for us and have a bunch of success for us. So he's got to continue to work and create this consistency for him to be able to go do what we all want him to do.
What have you seen from Trent Hudson and Devon Boots?
Yeah, Trent and Vaughn, both those guys obviously just getting here this summer. Trent's done a really nice job. He's gotten better inside the offense every single day. He's made some competitive plays, kind of what you saw on tape with his touchdowns there at New Mexico State. And then Vaughn's a guy that's done a really good job when he's had the ball in his hands, but he's a guy that's done a great job when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. So choosing to be physical in protection, playing really physical. So both those guys have come on and gotten better every day, which we've needed.
Is there any specific way you've seen Blake get better in the past week? And you said he's got some stuff to work on. What specifically on the field are you looking for him to grow in?
We just want him to continue to clean up fundamentally. How we do what we do inside the pocket when there's things going on around us, do we have the ability to stay incredibly calm and our eyes being our progression and being able to do some things that fundamentally he's not used to being coached that way. And so he's made great growth. I think today was probably the best day that he's had from a decision-making standpoint and fundamentally doing right and playing clean in the pocket. But we'll need to continue that.
We saw Gabe Jackson up here the other day, 10-year vet in the league. I mean, how important is it, you think, to have some of those guys come back and kind of impart some of their wisdom on your guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's huge, and it means the world, to our guys, for those guys to be able to come back, pour into them, and talk about experience. And I think with those guys that did it for such a long time, having great understanding of, man, these guys lived it, and they don't have to talk about it. They can share what they went through every single day, and that's been huge for our guys. We've got a bunch of guys that have come back, which has been awesome.
Robbie, I get the I can't help but wonder or you think very effusive in his praise of the defense and how they're playing. Surprised by that?
Not really, because I remember back in the spring when we were hearing some similar things about the defense was really impressing and they were holding their own against the offense. We saw a little bit of it in the spring game, but the offense kind of pulled away late there. But I don't know if it's just because we're getting closer to the season or what, but it does feel like the defense is starting to come around a little bit and people are starting to be a little higher on it than they were previously. And again, I don't know if that's just optimism rising as the season gets closer. We'll obviously find out pretty quickly when the season kicks off if that defense is actually going to be better than expected or not. That's kind of, when you put them in between the lines is whenever you really figure out who you are. So we'll figure that out, but it definitely does appear that the staff likes what they're seeing from the defensive side of the ball. I thought this was one of our best conversations with Lebby. Just from the beginning to the end, he just seemed, I don't know if he's just having a good day or what, but he just seemed kind of like an open book. It wasn't so coach speaky.
Yeah.
Because he has a tendency to do that, which is fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with being that way. But he is one of those, he's got, his buzzwords and stuff like that. I mean, he's been trained in this world for a long time beyond being a head coach. So this was the first time, maybe not the first time, but this is the best media availability I can remember having with him. I really enjoyed the conversation, getting his thoughts on both sides of the ball. And he was, the other day he joked, like, he was asked where he was during practice, and he said, with the quarterbacks, as you would imagine. But he really had a pulse on everything.
Yeah.
He knows every player. He had his eye on a lot of guys. He was asked specifically about defensive guys. He knew exactly what they had been up to. That was refreshing to hear from him. It wasn't just a whole, they're out there working hard or whatever. He knew exactly what they had been doing and things they needed to improve on and stuff like that. Some good thoughts on Kelly Jones, some good thoughts on DeMonte Russell. It was a good conversation.
I thought so, too. I thought we had good questions and got good answers from Lebby on this one. So, first scrimmage is this Sunday, and we get to talk to him again after that. So, we'll have hopefully some good conversation with him there and find out a little bit more about what happened in the scrimmage, the first one of fall camp, preseason camp.
I know.
All right, tomorrow's show, just a little more football. We got an interview with Mike Golic Jr., coming with tomorrow, so we'll talk some college football with him. I want to get his thoughts on what we talked about earlier this week about how what's the time frame you give a new coach nowadays, to get his ideas on that as a national guy. So we'll do that on tomorrow's show as well. Guys, have a great Thursday. We'll be back with you on Friday. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Mississippi Media Production.